I've got myself the answering the door to the police to be told my husband's died in mysterious circumstances robe. I was going to plan for a run after recording today, but then I decided to put on a full face of makeup for no reason, and I don't want to go running with red lipstick on, so I'm not gonna.
Like, I'm wearing eyeliner. That's never happened.
Oh, pretty. Yeah. You're so pretty.
Ah, thanks. I had to try and look nice to match the kids on the TikTok.
On the TikToks.
I ticked, I talked. I
rocked around the clock.
Trying to talk like a Gen Z is just never going to happen, so I'm just going to go the other way and talk like a 90-year-old woman.
I'm with you on this. I do this to the teenagers I work with, and they think I'm a delight.
A delight. Aren't you a sort, Joanna?
How does one tick a top?
Now, I'm pretty sure I've ticked, but how can I be sure I've talked?
Do I get a letter? And I've succeeded.
Jack was watching the first Spider-Man film last night. From the 70s.
Oh.
And I wasn't paying attention because I don't pay attention to what Jack watches on the telly. It's for the best. But I had my headphones on. And I looked up and I saw Spider-Man climbing on a building in the worst piece of green screen surely ever to make it to a feature film.
Excellent.
It's not that the green screen itself was not crisp, because it was, like, it's clearly been done on a professional green screen. But instead of having him, say, climb up a climbing wall, they've clearly got him climbing on the floor or something and pasted that onto the wall, and also got the scale wrong.
Nice.
Just slightly wrong, so it looks just bad rather than hilarious. Well, it was hilarious. I laughed and laughed and laughed and then left the room so Jack could enjoy his film.
Well done. So I also managed to, this part of my trying to make my mood get better, because for most of the week I have been pandemic brain.
Yeah.
I went to an online comedy gig last night, which I know they've been going on constantly throughout the whole pandemic. I've just never got around to going to one. But Andrew O'Neill does a weekly one. So I went along to that last night. It was very, very fun.
Cool. So that's like everyone's in a virtual audience.
Yeah, so it's like a Zoom thing. But it's small enough that everyone can have their mics and cameras on, so you can actually sort of hear us chat and applaud, like an hour of comedy music stuff, and then there was just sort of general chat afterwards, and we all had a nice little time. It was good fun.
Oh, I'm glad. That does sound fun. I don't think I know Andrew O'Neill.
Friend of the pod, Mark Burrows.
Friend of a friend of a friend.
Friend of a friend of the pod. They and Mark are in the band The Men Who Will Not Be Blamed for Nothing.
Oh, the punk music.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's...
Which I still feel bad saying punk in a dismissive tone when I'd forgotten the word for it when we were
talking. They are very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy metal, comedy. There was a very long song about magpies that brought me a lot of joy.
We like a magpie.
We do like a magpie.
We'll be getting to magpies.
Are we? Oh, yeah. No, we are.
Yeah. Next month? Magpies? Lords and ladies, is that not magpies?
Probably.
I reckon it is. I'm going to say yes. I can't think what else it would be.
It definitely crops up at some point.
Yes, I know it crops up at some point. Oh, do you mean it next month?
Yes, next month will definitely crop up at some point.
No, I mean... God damn it, Joanna. Yes, we both know that magpies come up with the rhyme. I'm saying, is it definitely cropping up at some point in Lords and Ladies? Or are you just trying to... not say things by saying something?
No, I literally can't remember where it turns up. Okay, and if okay. It is Lords and Ladies or in the book.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I am very pretty and a total dumbass today. This plays well.
Me too. Yeah, good. Oh, usually one of us is working slightly better than the other, but that does not appear to be the case.
Okay,
it's
again.
Fine. It's fine. We'll be fine.
Allowances must be made in these unprecedented times.
I think they're pretty fucking precedented now, though, aren't they?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's been a fucking year. At this point, it's precedented.
We're really nearly at a precedented year.
Fuck. I don't mind mispronouncing ancient Greek playwrights, but I feel like...
What are they going to do?
Fight me, Aristophan. Aristophanes.
All right, Aristophanes.
All Aristophanes, your mother.
All right, fuck. I can't remember which one he is.
He was... No. I think he was the frog guy.
Sure, why not? I've been reading about Aristotle this morning, so... Aristotle and Archimedes and Socrates.
You know. Bugger for the bull. Hobbes was fun of his dream.
All of them.
Rene Descartes. Okay, I also promised that just as I only made one Spanish Inquisition next week, that's my one Philosopher's Song by Monty Python's done for this week.
Yeah. If you would like to sing it in its entirety, I can always stick it at the end. We can make the outro section of Joanna the Musical.
No, because that sets a bad precedent of Joanna the Musical.
I mean, I've already started writing it in my head.
Actually, no, it could be pretty good. I feel like we need to do something to really drive each other into gear.
Okay, like what?
Fuck knows.
I did my homework.
There was homework?
Yeah, I just made a note of something I wanted to look up and I did it.
Oh, okay. Jesus, well done. Sorry.
I didn't mean to panic. It's not like an essay.
Was I meant to make a
PowerPoint? Yes, of course there was homework, Joanna. I hope you have your presentation ready. And now awake from your anxiety dream. Why aren't you wearing trousers?
Not last weekend, weekend before, I made a PowerPoint presentation. Well, not PowerPoint, I used the Apple equivalent. But I made a presentation for the first time in, I want to say, 10 or 15 years. And it took me until 3 o'clock in the morning.
I had to make a presentation this week as well. I was learning how to do, like... No, obviously, I'm not going early 2000s mental on it. I just want to be able to make things fade in and out. But everything's changed, and it took me quite a while to work out again.
Mine was slightly less fancy. It was a quiz for my little Sunday Zoom chat. So it took me till 3 a.m. to put a bunch of silly moustaches on. Like Joanna Lumley and Jennifer Saunders.
That sounds considerably more fancy than mine, actually. So,
I mean, it was artistic. I will send you some of the pictures because really I think I deserve a prize.
When we finally get around to doing PowerPoint presentations for each other, I am going full wanker with all like the spinning word art and things like that.
Totally.
I can create a perfectly nice, modern, clean, professional PowerPoint, but in God's name, why would I?
That is, I think, one of the things that I'm looking forward to the most post-pandemic is having a small party of like five of us where we just all prepare PowerPoint presentations on something we're really interested in.
Who else are you inviting?
Okay, three of us, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, you know, three might be a bit small. Maybe we should have a couple of others, but I just can't think of anyone else I really want to get engaged in that nonsense with us.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things you need. There's someone who's willing to do it and someone we want there, and I just don't think they're going to overlap.
There are other people I could potentially do that with, but really.
People who are as terrible as us, we just don't want around.
There is a very specific brand of nonsense.
Okay, do you know what? We just better fucking get on with it. I might get another coffee.
Yeah, I might grab one. But yeah, should we make a podcast?
Yeah, I think so. I think at this point, you know, we're here.
Let's make a podcast.
Let's make a podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Tree Shall Make Ye Fret, a podcast in which we are reading and recapping every book from Terry Pratchett's Discworld series, one at a time, in chronological order. I'm Joanna Hagen.
And I'm Francine Carroll.
And this is part two of our discussion of Small Gods.
Yeah, part two, the middle bit. The building. I've forgotten the term for it, Joanna.
Rising action.
Rising action, which is what is happening.
Yes, much action happens.
Much action has happened. It's risen, it's fallen, and floated away across the sea. So,
yep. Note on spoilers before we jump all the way in. This is a spoiler-light podcast, obviously heavy spoilers for the book we're on, Small Gods, but we will avoid spoiling any major future events in the Discworld series, and we're saving any and all discussion of the final Discworld novel, The Shepherd's Crown, until we get there, so you, dear listener, can come on the journey with us.
In a prototype of a steam-powered boat.
Or in a ghost ship across the Dead Seas.
Yeah, one of those two.
So yeah, that bit made me really... Like,
choose your fighter!
I'm going for the ghost ship for the aesthetic.
All right, that's fair. Sorry, it made you what?
It made me want an Adnams ghost ship.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something profound. Never mind.
Oh, no.
That's a beer, listeners who don't have an Abnens nearby.
Sorry. No, localish to us brewery. Anyway. So we're tangenting early.
Yes. Just a warning, listeners. Both of us are kind of in a pretty good mood, but also that's maybe because half of our brains have switched off finally.
Yeah. Also,
you know, great for us, not necessarily for you.
I don't know how you are, but I am like, sleep deprived.
Yes.
Anyway, do we have anything to follow up on from last week, Francine?
Yeah, fucking yes. I did my homework. Sorry, hey. With the casual. Yeah, I read a really old review that I'd not seen before where they mentioned our casual profanity and how they can't listen to it in the car with their kids. So sorry. What am I doing? Oh, homework. Yeah.
Homework, Francine.
So, yeah, last week we said, when is this happening? In the timeline of the Discworld. And so I looked up, Elspace have a timeline. And approximately 1885 UC, which I assume means our time-ish, is when Small Gods happens, which is about, 27 years before Granny Weatherwax was born.
Right. I thought that that was the case. It had taken place before.
Yeah.
Effectively, a lot of the Discworld books we've already done. But the century of the fruit bat is also mentioned in this, as in dragging something, kicking and screaming into, which makes sense because by later books, we will discuss dragging things, kicking and screaming out of.
Yeah. So the century of the fruit bat begins about 4 years after this.
Okay, great.
So, yeah. The three lice, the century of the three lice we're currently in, and I think everyone was probably very happy to leave that.
And enter the century of the fruit bat, because fruit bats are fucking awesome.
Can you remember what the... Oh, the next one's the century of the anchovy.
Yep.
Cool.
I do like an anchovy.
I like an anchovy. I've got some anchovies in the fridge.
Excellent.
You melt a little anchovy in your oil before you start cooking a savoury sauce, listeners, and it adds a lovely hint of umami. Let me with the cooking tips today.
We've switched
brains. I've done my homework. I've got cooking tips. Now it's all going to fall apart as we realise I've got half a page of handwritten notes and quite a lot of history to try and talk about.
And your co-host is literally a potato.
Yes, literally a potato with headphones on, but beautiful eyeliner.
Thank you.
Francine, would you like to tell us what happened previously in Small Gods?
Oh, I mean, not really, but I will. It's not because I want to withhold the information, it's just because look at my handwriting.
Excellent.
Yeah, quiet. Previously on Small Gods. In a monotheistic citadel, naive novice brother considers the tortoise because it's whispering to him from a melon patch. Said tortoise is great god Om, somewhat diminished by the fact that brother is his last true believer and therefore source of power. In a more or less related turn of events, brother's astounding memory is noted by chief villain Vorbis, who decides to take the young believer on an peace mission to the neighbouring Ophibi. Meanwhile, in shadowy rooms adorned with symbolic scratches, the turtle moves.
Ooh. Right, so in this section of Small Gods, still at sea, a storm rages as the Queen of the Seas expresses her anger at the murdered porpoise. Brother's life is almost given to the angry ocean, but Om's intervention with his fellow deity saves them and calms the waters in the nick of time. However, now a debt is owed. Vorbis instructs Brother to watch for flashing lights on the coast as Om dreams of his beginnings as a small god. Brother communicates using the captain's mirror. The captain tells him that the turtle moves. Om wakes and admits to Brother that he did not, in fact, create a round world, and the turtle might indeed move. The Omnians sail into Ophibe for their mission of diplomacy. As they're led through the city, Brother learns of heathen gods and Om checks on Brother's understanding of belief. Blindfolded, the group are taken through a dangerous labyrinth and into the palace of Ophibe. Brother remembers the way. Inside the palace of Ophibe, the Omnians are given meat and fruit on a fast day, the horror. Allowed out to explore for the evening, Om and Brother go in search of a philosopher. They come across some passionate philosophers at the pub. Unfortunately, Brother is strapped for cash. He's told Didactylos, back at the palace library, might be his best bet. The next day, the tyrant of Ophibe presents Vorbis with a peace treaty as Brother looks on. The tyrant will brook no negotiation, but he gives Vorbis the night to consider. Om goes in search of the library and finds himself picked up by Didactylos and his nephew Urn. We learn that Brother Murdoch may not have been stoned to death in a Phoebe after all, but Vorbis twists the truth as he tells Brother to go and explore for the day. Brother finds Om performing geometry for Didactylos and Urn. Brother pretends to be a scribe as blind Didactylos shows him the library. He's given a scroll on gods to study with Om's help. Om and Brother talk gods, and Om tells Brother he might need to be the next prophet. As the sun sets, Brother walks with Vorbis and learns about meta-truth as he leads him through the labyrinth. A guard and a watchman meet untimely ends, and the city gates are opened as Brother finds out that, eventually, an army can in fact cross the desert. As Omnians perform a coup in Phoebe, Didactylos stands up to Vorbis. Brother is sent to burn the dangerous library. With Sergeant Simony somewhat on their side, Brother memorises the library, and our ragtag bunch of philosophical friends make their escape on Urn's unnamed boat. As Afib burns and fights back, the gang discuss escaping to Ankh-Morpork, and Simony has some ideas. Knowledge sloshes through Brother's brain as Om negotiates again with the Queen of the Sea. As Vorbis chases their small boat in a ship of his own, a storm rages. The unnamed boat is shocked as Brother escapes, and the ship goes down to sea death as Vorbis somehow survives. Francine.
Sorry. I was hoping your eyes would flicker back to the screen before you'd finished your monologue, but no.
No, I very intentionally don't look at you when I have to read out large chunks of text because I can't keep a straight face anyway.
All right, fine.
Not because of your face, just because I'm really bad at existing.
Okay. Yeah, I've only got a fortnight left of this Zoom Pro, so I thought I'd give myself some cool pixel sunglasses.
They suit you.
Thank you.
Helicopter and loincloth watch, obviously implied heavily throughout, especially with the philosophers. They're all about the loincloths.
And the helicopters.
Yeah.
Well, not the helicopters exactly, but the cool mechanical contraptions. And the
cool mechanical contraptions. We've got the proto speedboat, which is a helicopter in spirit. We also, four other things we are keeping track of. The librarian gets a cameo.
Yeah, he's come back in time through the passages of L-space to
save some scrolls
some
from
books,
the burning
yeah.
library.
Oh yeah, save some scrolls. Sorry, not nick some books, of course.
Yes, saving, not stealing.
Very important.
Yes, so we're very pleased that he's there. Of course, he's not explained. For those of us keeping track of that.
No. Although the Ankh-Morpokian library is briefly explained.
Yes,
I quite like the small description of it. The dictionaries of illusory words and the thesaurus stomping down the aisle or whatever it is in this one.
I did enjoy that section. So quotes, I believe yours is, and we've got wildly differing page numbers, but I'm pretty sure you're first. Because mine's very near the end.
Yeah, no, I think you might be right, actually. I meant to switch them around and I didn't. Yeah, sorry. Well, said Simony, we live and learn, just like you said. Some of us even do it the other way around, said Didactylos. It's like that as a little fucking burn. Hoo-hoo! Hot!
Didactylos is quite bitchy, actually.
He is. I like him a lot.
I am a big fan of Didactylos.
A little bit of snark from our resident philosopher / I think Terry Pratchett vocalising.
Yeah.
Through the...
He's definitely, I think, the Pratchett mouthpiece, not the Pratchett mouthpiece.
Funny old world.
Yes, his philosophy is excellent.
How much have you got on philosophy in this one, by the way?
Not too much.
I seem to be going way more off about it.
I was going to, but then it was all a bit rabbit holey rather than actually talking about the book, and I didn't want to. So I've kept it to not too much. But the quote I've chosen is rather relevant to philosophy.
Ooh. Oh, go on then.
This is also from Didactylos. Life in this world, he said, is, as it were, a sojourn in a cave. What can we know of reality? For all we see of the true nature of existence is, shall we say, no more than bewildering and amusing shadows cast upon the inner wall of the cave by the unseen blinding light of absolute truth, from which we may or may not deduce some glimmer of veracity. And we as troglodyte seekers of wisdom can only lift our voices to the unseen and say humbly, go on, do deformed rabbit, it's my favourite.
Now, I know there's something called Plato's cave, but I don't know what it is. Is that a...
So this is Plato's cave theory.
Okay.
I am casting my mind very far back. This is the first, very, very first thing we studied when I did A-level philosophy. So I'm trying to remember something I did
Oh, I'm sure they don't have a Wikipedia page or something like it now.
I could have done, but I thought I'd see if I could go from memory.
All right, well, go on.
What I mostly remember about studying it is that we were told to watch the film The Matrix and that...
I want to watch The Matrix.
The idea is that effectively what we see as humans is only a shadow on the wall of a cave, and okay. that real truth is beyond our understanding.
And that if you wear a cool enough trench coat, you can dodge bullets in slow motion.
Yeah, Plato definitely said that.
Yeah.
Well, no, so the idea of The Matrix is you take the pill and you see the real world, not the one that is being... The idea is that the world pre-pill in The Matrix is the shadowy reflections of the cave. And when you take the red pill...
Yeah,
which is I don't know.
Incels and QAnon have just ruined this terminology so thoroughly that I don't think I'm ever going to be able to watch this without snorting through it.
I know the kind of disgusting irony of QAnon and incels adopting the phrase "red pill" from a film that was meant to be a trans allegory made by two trans women.
Yeah,
although before they were out,
is it an allegory?
Yeah,
they is it an axiom.
The Wachowski sisters used the term trans allegory in multiple interviews, right. So I thought. I'm still not sure what an allegory is, but I know one when I see it.
Do you?
No, not even fucking slightly.
All right, but we can probably trust those two to know.
Yes. So, that's Plato's cave. I hope my excellent summary there made it really clear for everyone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm educated.
But also, yeah. I like the Bratchety technique, the lofty, yeah. high-minded, then go on to do deformed rabbit.
It's my favourite.
Which, yes. The do deformed rabbit is my favourite, is another one of those little things that crops up again and again and always makes me giggle.
Yeah, yeah. Like a million to one chance.
That crops up 9 times out of 10. So, characters.
Yeah.
We will start with the Queen of the Sea.
Ooh, okay.
Because she's sort of the first new character we meet in this section. And this is when they're on the boat, and Om, as this very small deity with one believer, has to wrestle with this angry deity. And, of course, she's angry because they killed the porpoise.
Yeah, don't kill a porpoise, guys.
Yeah, don't kill a porpoise. And all of the gods we meet in this section are great, and I like the idea that they're all actually kind of fucking dumbasses.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
But her absolute rage is quite impressive. And then we have...
You haven't been so mad you made a hurricane appear over one boat.
Like, so many fucking times, to be honest.
I know.
It's really awkward. I kind of need to learn to control my temper. You get a reputation after a while. Yeah. I mean, of all the things I've got a reputation for, Francine. Hurricanes. That's the main one.
Yep. Joanna Hurricane Hagen. That's what they call you. That's quite cool, actually. I was trying to insult you, but that's awesome.
If people could start calling me that, actually... If we could try and make that catch on.
All right, cool. Sorry, I'll stop interrupting you with absolute nonsense. Carry on.
Yeah, because I'm saying so many intelligent things.
Carry on with the structured nonsense written by someone better than us,
please. Gilash, which is the god that Om supplanted back in his early days of deityhood.
Yep, sure. Godhood.
That was the word.
Better.
I was wondering if the name was a reference
to something.
Sounds like Gilgamesh.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I looked it up to see if it was referenced to something, and obviously the downside to Googling something like Gilgamesh is you mostly get then references to the book Small Gods. Thankfully, annotated Pratchett exists. So,
oh, yeah, good on.
Yeah. It is Gilgamesh, but Gilgamesh was also the ruler of one of the Euphrates civilizations, and Ur was a Babylonian city, as well as a prefix signifying primal or original. So we've got Simony.
Yes.
Who I brought up briefly last week. We'll talk about him more today, especially as we get on to the organized religion stuff of it all. One thing I forgot to mention, and Stacey reminded me. Thank you, Stacey. That Simony itself is
Stacey can't see my finger gun, but I did a finger gun. Hi, Stacey.
Simony is a religious crime. It's the crime of selling benefices.
Oh, like so benefice, like being a blessing or a...
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Come on, you're the Catholic here, Joanna.
I mean...
I know you're not a Catholic. You went to Catholic places.
Yeah, I'm not so much lapsed as yeeted myself out of the entire organized religion.
Yeah. Lapsed sounds a lot more gentle than what actually happened there.
Yeet.
It's a reward received in exchange for services rendered and as a retainer for future services.
Ah, there we go. So goods. That's benefices.
Money can be exchanged for goods or services.
Ah. So yeah, so selling benefices is the crime of simony.
Cool. That doesn't seem to
ever come up in relation to his name or his character.
No, just a cool religious adjacent name.
Yeah, which yeah, okay. I found quite funny. I was looking through Annotated Pratchett and there's a note about Simony's name and that it's selling benefices. Okay. And it says underneath, I didn't bother putting this in because it's not relevant in that it's never used in relation to his character. That's yeah. not something he does. But so many people wrote to me about it that I've included it here now.
I like it when he puts in little exasperated comments of his own.
It does make me giggle. But yeah, his version of this kind of weirdly zealot-like belief in Didactylos is quite interesting as a parallel to the Omnians.
Yeah, I liked that Om said he was almost as good as a believer. It's the whole love and hate thing, like strong feelings either way.
Yeah.
With love being the indifference, indifference being the opposite of love rather than hate.
Yeah, hate is still feeling just as passionate about something.
Yeah, you can almost go, haha, it's one of those militant atheists that we like to laugh at. But to be fair, he's got more of a reason than most to
yeah, and that he's lived that in way, this horrible so, yeah. society. But I do feel like that is kind of the point of his character.
Yeah, yeah. And to find as much of a, as you say, zealous belief in a new system.
But also to really hate something that much, you do kind of have to believe in it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like Satanists not really believing in Satan.
Yes.
It's, yes, the Christians that really believe in Satan.
Yeah.
Some of them. I don't know. Not all Christians, hashtag. I really don't know.
Yeah. So Legibus.
What? Oh, yes, the bath man.
Yes, the sort of Archimedes was the one who did the Eureka, or apparently.
Yeah. I like the idea that Pratchett's just kind of taken that reference and run with it. And now all philosophers live in baths and, you know, wear and tear on loofah.
Yep. And jump out of it. I like the fact that he sort of turns up to this little shop, buys some chalk, draws on the wall and says, I'll send someone down to collect it later.
Yeah, these professors, like the mad professor type, isn't it?
Yeah. There's the great line. He's sort of standing there. So he's had this idea and he's drawing on the wall. And then he says, he says to the guy with the shop, can I also have a lever of infinite length and an immovable place to stand, please? And he says, well, what you see is what I got, sir. Pots and general household items, but a bit short on axiomatic mechanisms. And I want to reassure listeners that after my brave efforts during pyramids to explain axioms like such as Zeno's paradox, I will not be trying to do that again this week.
No. I must say, although we have promised not to do any Monty Python references, it has quite a lot of this reads quite Python-esque. That line in particular, there's another one that I read out to Jack that sounded particularly.
There are a few Python-y. Very Python-y moments.
Yeah.
Especially around philosophers.
Yes, of course.
So Legibus, Aristocrates, whose name I'm assuming is meant to be a combo of Aristotle and Socrates.
Yeah, and happens to pleasingly mean aristocrat almost.
Exactly, yes. I enjoyed that one. The tyrant. So a Phoebe is a democracy. Again, we've learned this section definitely parallels Tepic's trip to a Phoebe in Pyramids. Yes. It's got the same rhythm to it, down to finding philosophers to figure out what the fuck is going on with the gods.
Yeah.
But we learn a bit more about the Ephebian democratic system. Every man should have the vote, provided he's not poor, foreign, or mad, frivolous, or a woman. Which, totally fair. So every 5 years, someone's elected to be tyrant, provided he can prove he's honest, intelligent, sensible, and trustworthy. And of course, immediately after he's elected, he's revealed to be a criminal madman, totally out of touch with the view of the ordinary philosopher in the street.
Yeah. Did you know that there was a tyrant, like called a tyrant, that ruled over ancient Greece at one point?
No, I didn't know that.
Pisistratus. There might have been more than one, but that was the one I read about. And tyrant, as hinted at here, didn't mean terrible person. just meant one who couldn't be challenged by any above or below. I expect most of the story behind his rise to power is legend, because it involves things like basically tricking everyone into thinking he was a demigod or something by riding in on a chariot with a 6-foot woman who was pretending to be Athena.
Nice.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty good story. It is so easy just to lose track of what the fuck you were trying to research in the first place with these topics. Ancient Greece was wild, yo.
Ancient Greece was fucking awesome. I would have loved to have been an ancient Greek philosopher sitting around.
No, because you're a frivolous and a woman, Joanna.
I'm a frivolous and a woman.
Yes. Well, they would consider you such, I'm sure.
I was going to say, part-time woman.
Yes.
Every now and then.
Part-time woman, part-time frivolous. Full-time mad.
Full-time mad philosopher. I just really like the idea that they basically wrote fan fiction of themselves and their mates as plays having arguments so they could put their words into their friends' mouths and win philosophical debates.
I think we quite often do that in group chat.
Oh yeah, no, we absolutely do, to be fair.
Possibly not in the same kind of way that will be exalted in a couple thousand years, but...
Speak for yourself. I think our group chats are going to be held up as a classic example of the ancient British civilization.
We got was Aristotle the playwright? No, Aesclic, the one I couldn't pronounce last week. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that guy. He was a playwright. Mm-hmm.
Asclepius. And there were a couple more that were mentioned in the same breath in whichever article I was reading. But
yeah, like I said, Aristophanes was the one who did the frog thing.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, no, the frog thing came up in Dark Side of the Sun. Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. I can't remember anything about this play other than it had, like, a frog chorus, and apparently Stephen Sondheim once did it with Meryl Streep.
Yeah, so...
Who else are we talking about?
What the fuck are we on about?
Didactylos.
Didactylos, yay, the good one.
Yes, we like
him. I mean, they're all fine, but we like the dirty barrel philosopher.
Yep. He poses the famous philosophical conundrum. Yes, but what's it all really about then when you get right down to it? I mean, really...
Which is another beautiful example of Terry Pratchett just really wanting to put the kind of nonsense pub common sense into as much of this ridiculous fancy world as he can.
Yes, I do enjoy it. I also like the summation of Didactylos's philosophy, cynicism, stoicism, and the Epicureans.
Yes.
Translation is, you can't trust any burger further than you can throw him. There's nothing you can do about it, so let's have a drink.
It's pretty good condensed philosophy, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, I'm very up for it.
Generally, all I know about the rest of those is how they relate to the Stoics, because that's the only Greek philosophy book I've read. But
I haven't actually read that much on the Stoics. I've mostly learned about Stoicism from the group chat.
Yeah. See, we're great. Well, I mean,
educational.
The philosophy talk is generally me and our other friend arguing at each other, but... And I do say at each other, not with each other, because let's be honest, I don't think we're taking much on board.
No, I think you're both just writing essays. It's great to watch.
And eventually it turns into the... And then Ayn Rand slid in on socks for some reason. Oh, God. And this is why we can't tax the rich, Joanna.
So Didactylos also has the nil illegitimo carborundum thing, which is another one of those sort of Pratchetty cod Latin.
Oh, yeah, I didn't look that up.
Don't let the bastards grind you down.
Oh, cute.
That's another one that definitely comes up a lot, especially sort of in Pratchett Facebook groups and things.
I noticed someone calling someone else chicken in Latin.
Yes,
what
I did notice
with
that.
Latin. What was it? Avis Domestica or something?
Yeah. Latin-esque.
Is it not? Yeah.
I think the Latin is all sort of that slightly silly version of Latin.
Cool.
But yeah, so I like Didactylos and Urn, obviously, his nephew, the slightly more practical philosopher. Urn's kind of this in-between thing. So Didactylos is the philosopher, and then Urn starts doing the practical things, like making the boat go, and then Simony takes the practical things, and, well, we'll see what he does with them next week. And then... What will Simony do with the combustion engine?
Hint, violence.
And then other new, this is just a little cameo moment, but when the ship goes down and their death is there on the ship, there's a death of rats is there lining up the ship's rats. So good for that. Those wondering at the end of Reaper Man, if the rat hung on, he did. He's back. The grim squeaker.
Do you reckon the rats kind of went somewhere else or stayed on the ghost ship?
I think they stayed on the ghost ship.
That's nice.
They all had a lovely time on the ghostly seas together.
That's good. And yes, as you were saying last week, I'd forgotten about this, but you're quite right. At this point, the concept of the great desert of the afterlife is still person specific. And so these people get the great sea of the afterlife.
Yes.
Although, as Pratchett liked to bend the rules for narrative purposes, I wouldn't have been surprised if even later he'd done this because it's just nice, isn't it?
It is.
So for these guys, they can have a sea instead of a desert because, ooh.
I mean, obviously they're all dead and that's quite sad, but I very much enjoyed that section. I thought it was quite sweet.
I mean, let's be honest, what were they sailing towards? Nothing nice. And at least now they get to explore some cool sea without Vorbis.
Yeah, I'd read like a whole spin-off book just about like them having some fun adventures on the ghostly seas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. If anyone wants to, like, I don't know, draw that for us or something, go ahead.
Yeah.
On to characters.
I thought you were going to say write that for us, or like a bit of an ask, mate. But
yeah, no, don't like write a whole Discord spin-off series. But if you want to draw like a cool ghost ship or something, we'd be into it.
Yeah, we don't like Pirates of the Caribbean anymore, so we're kind of
no. But I managed to reference it during my Lord of the Rings tweets.
Yes, you did.
I was very proud of that.
Yeah. Which, by the way, listeners, happened on Monday instead of Saturday. So if you checked when I told you to, you might not have seen them. But now you can go on our account and see the highlights screenshotted.
Yes, Francine very kindly took the 100 to 200 odd shit posts and found a few of the funny ones. Anyway, on to characters that we've hung out with already. So I thought his musing on the concept of fairness quite interesting.
Yes.
Because
yes,
he's
something he hadn't thought about as a god.
No, because he hadn't had to. And because, like, as we said, gods don't really have to think. They've got humans doing it for them. But Om is now stuck in this very precarious position. He is a god, but with his one believer who he needs to keep alive.
Yes.
And so he's now very picked up. He's angry at Vorbis. He's angry that the porpoise has been killed. Not just because it means the Queen of the Seas is going to take it out on all of them, but because Vorbis is going to get away scot-free, having been the person who insisted on the death of the porpoise.
Yes, because he wasn't the one who did it.
Yeah. And he's sulky about that. And obviously he's got this whole sort of thing with the Queen of the Sea where he's trying to explain to her, like, I'm not fair game, or, you know, this is fair game, this isn't.
Yeah, and something kind of gets through. Like it kind of trickles into her consciousness enough that she's like, all right, I'll go for this ship, which is fair game.
Yeah. But there's the nice line, gods are not very introspective.
No, one
which,
wouldn't be.
There's a couple of those lines throughout the book. Like last week we had gods have no one to pray to.
Yeah.
And I like these sort of things about the nature of gods. I also like the line, gods never need to be very bright when there's humans around to be it for them.
Yeah, it's a nice summary of what he was trying to get at with all the prophet stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, Om was clearly just, like, manically raving, drunk on power, running around as a bull. And the prophets were like, all right, so I'm going to interpret that like this.
And then hopefully
for my
that
gains.
Will be good
yeah.
for all of us.
Or at least for me.
Yeah, so I liked Om and his growing concept of fairness, and then Brother yeah. has an interesting journey.
Brother's very first and second thoughts, as I think Pratchett would put it later on.
He is, and you see him start to transition. There was a line somewhere, I haven't noted it down, but something about there were the thoughts that watched Brother's thoughts.
Yeah.
That was very first and second thoughts, or a proto version, and he starts transitioning to this different kind of faith. I mean, he can't not believe in Om, because Om is there.
Yeah.
But he stops believing in the religious shell built around Om.
Which book was it that the quote about you don't need belief anymore if it's there came from? That's one of it wasn't this book, was it?
No, it's sort of mentioned in Witches Abroad. Witches don't believe in gods. They don't need to because they're there. It would be like believing in the milkman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's extended more here.
Yeah. In a kind of less trivial way.
You sort of have the trivial version of it with the philosophers. Like, they're all very aware that the gods exist, so they're not bothering to believe in them, and they're getting down to the fundamentals instead. Apart from FedEx, god of messengers, lovely guy.
Oh, I missed that.
So you see his mind start to open as he's in a Phoebe, and he's just getting more input. But you see it really early on in this section. The captain has to lend him this mirror, which is something not allowed under Omnianism.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, that was a good moment.
Brother's about to say, brother thinks you'll be purified through the Inquisition, and then he doesn't say it, and he can't quite admit to himself why.
Yeah, he says, I'm so sorry instead. Yeah.
He's stopped believing in the Inquisition, effectively.
Mm.
And then as a foil for him, you've got Vorbis.
Vorbis,
the villain. Vorbis. Who
sees... I'm still preparing my thesis on Vorbis. I think the conclusion part of the book would be a good part to go off on my massive rant.
Yeah, I've definitely got more to say in the next section, but something I noticed with this is as you see Brother's faith start transitioning into something else, you see Vorbis pushing it. He's really testing
him. Testing the limits, yeah.
Yeah, and it's this weird, not weird, it's this curiosity he has that's the same reason he left the tortoise on its back.
Yes, and the same reason he tries to get the team of soldiers to go backwards up the booby-trapped alley. Yeah,
he wants to see what happens when you push people.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's mostly created this very intense belief in most people, and everything he does is to keep that belief. But in that case, it's so established with Brother that it's more interesting to see how far that belief can be pushed.
I think that his kind of foregone conclusion about Brother, though, is blinding him slightly in a way that it wouldn't for most people, because Brother is coming out with answers that Vorbis is kind of happy with because he thinks of Brother as already as an ally. So with like the established truth stuff.
Yeah.
When Brother is able to work out what happened to
Brother Murdoch.
And Vorbis is okay with that. I feel like if he hadn't already decided Brother was on side.
Yeah. He's very sure of Brother's
not
loyalty.
Been happy that. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because that's, you know, that was pretty complex unraveling that Brother did there rather than a straight record and replay.
Yeah, and to be specific about it, because I wasn't in my summary because I was trying to get through everything.
Oh, so sure, yeah.
Brother Murdoch went to a Phoebe to preach, and as far as the Omnians know, was stoned to death in a Phoebe, and his body was brought back and stoned and shown having been stoned to death. What actually happened is he went to a Phoebe, got laughed at, and Vorbis had him stoned to death so he could tell everyone the Ephebians did it. Because
what
he
would
needed
now be known as a false flag, something like that.
Yeah, it's to create propaganda for another holy war.
Yes.
And the other Vorbis thing. Oh, sorry.
Yes, no, sorry. It was just referred to as the trivial truth, i.e., the actual truth, versus the deep truth, which is the ideal we want to uphold and which we can surround with lies in a moral way. Which I think probably goes back to this just war thing we talked about last week.
It also goes slightly back to the cave
thing.
Well,
that sounded wanky, didn't it? Sorry. Yeah.
But it also goes back to the Plato's cave thing. That's the idea. You're not seeing, you're seeing the superficial truth and not the pure truth.
And therefore, the deformed rabbit of our soul.
God, we were doing so
God,
well
I wish I hadn't ended that sentence. Sorry.
The other Vorbis thing is the army getting across the desert, which is horrifying.
Mm.
If an army can get a quarter of a way and leave a cache of water and do that, and then another army can use part of that cache to go further. And the idea is just that a lot of people had to die to get enough caches of supply set up to get everyone across this fucking desert.
Yes.
And it has been going for months. It's been going before Brother Murdoch even went to Afib, and it said, you know, you had to have a mind like Vorbis's to plan your retaliation before your attack.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good line. Who's next?
I think that was all I had on characters, actually. Okay. So I've sort of folded a bit of talking philosophy a bit more into locations, specifically Afib.
Very chefy term.
I am chef. So we go to Afib. This is where we spend most of the thing. We've been to Afib before, as I said, pyramids.
Nice few little sub bullet points in here.
We have. So we've got, I already mentioned, I just really enjoy the sort of statues of gods everywhere.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm on the wrong page. Foley.
Rassel.
So we've got the goddess of wisdom with her penguin, because the sculptor fucked up.
I like it. Wise penguins.
I like the penguin just sort of popping up to squawk at people if they've criticized the goddess of wisdom.
Yeah. I kind of like the, I don't know if it would be a slight reference or not, but like Penguin being the publisher and everything, see penguins on books everywhere in Roundworld.
Yeah, maybe that was a bit of a reference.
So that's the penguin I'm seeing.
Brother's horror at the fact that there's a goddess of negotiable affection. Petulia.
She saw the niche, she took it.
I approve. So yes, I like the fact that all these gods, little gods, are just sort of lingering about. And they all, like I said, they're real enough. There's a statue of Offler, the crocodile god, which isn't one of theirs. He's Clatchian, but they quite liked him. They thought he was quite fun, so they put him in.
They're real enough that one of them was in the crowd throwing vegetables or throwing his canteen of wine at the Brother Murdoch.
And when we get to the philosopher's thing, which is the other main thing I wanted to talk about with the Phoebes, we get to the philosophy pub moment.
Yeah.
And Brother starts asking about gods, and they sort of say, oh, relic of an outmoded belief system. Apart from, and then they suddenly realise the gods might hear them. They're like, oh yeah, apart from this one. But yeah, onto the philosophers in the pub. I love this section. It made me laugh a lot. Including the guy getting kicked out of the pub saying, I'm telling you, listen, finite intellect, right, cannot by means of comparison reach the absolute truth of things, because being by nature indivisible, truth excludes the concept of more or less, so that nothing but truth itself can be the exact measure of truth. You bastard.
Yeah, I definitely like the idea that instead of kind of these stately, exalted figures that we kind of see Greek philosophers as, they were just, drunken pub arguments most of the time.
I also want to put up, timeline confusion, is that one of the philosophers hanging around in the pub is Zeno.
Yes.
Who we met in Pyramids.
Yeah.
Yes, and it must be the same Zeno, because he's referenced at having axioms to do with tortoises and things, which was obviously Pyramids had the things like shooting arrows at a tortoise, but it would never hit the tortoise.
Let me check my timeline again.
Because if this is before Granny Weatherwax was born, I don't think it can be. It either needs to be before or after the events of Pyramids.
Yeah, hold on, let me have a quick
look. Actually, no, it probably could run at about the same time. Because the only outside of Jelly Baby stuff we get in Pyramids is Inner Phoebe and briefly Ankh-Morpork at the beginning.
Yeah. This seems to be one of the slight... Yeah, this is one of the ones that doesn't fit exactly in.
I mean, we'll allow it.
Yeah, there's a little footnote there saying, and perhaps simultaneously a century later. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, this whole... bit Ephebe is kind of a parallel, obviously, to the golden age of Athens, ancient Greece, which I think I'd noted down later, but I may as well say now, is I think specifically the kind of period where Athens was in charge of the Grecian Empire and very rich and very saturated in this kind of liberal learning kind of idea, which was a little bit of a veil over some fairly deep corruption, which led to its eventual fall. But that's just how empires go. But yeah, so we're looking at about 500 to 300 BC Greece, which I think, I didn't check the exact timeline, would also be about the time where Archimedes was, in theory, building these mirror weapons, like the one in mentioned at the start of this section, and the trebuchet as well.
Yeah.
That was to defend Syracuse against the Romans, which didn't work, incidentally. It did apparently burn the fleet, but Archimedes was killed by said Romans in said city.
Oh, poor Archimedes.
Poor Archimedes. But
lovely chap.
Was he?
I don't know. Probs.
Pretty smart. Pretty smart. We'll give him that. Yeah.
Yes, we'll give Archimedes that. He was quite clever.
Got a brain on him, isn't he? But yeah, that's that. When you think of, when one thinks of ancient Greece and this kind of enlightenment, it is that period.
Yeah, but it is
post-Persia wars, pre-Sparta wars.
Yeah, it was philosophy and enlightenment, but still the belief in a specific pantheistic system.
Yeah, although that could be kind of bent here and there to fit the idea of kind of a universal energy as well, and it all got very metaphysical.
Yeah, it was as the pantheistic belief in the ancient Greek gods was beginning to fade, but it was still kind of, it was a bit like this with the philosophers. They're like, okay, yeah, we've got the gods, but we've also got the philosophy.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
From what I remember of what I've read, obviously.
Yes, yes, exactly. Cut down my handwriting. slaves as well, you mentioned, and yeah, that's another parallel between Greece and this place, being treated.
Slaves were a lot
better than one might imagine.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and defend slavery.
I'm trying to say this in a way that's not defending slavery.
But the version of slavery the version of slavery in this is they get 2 weeks a year running away allowance and weekends off, and they get fed, and there's the line Vorbis says, oh, in Omnia we have no slaves, and the tyrant says yes, and I believe fish have no word for water.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the idea that in Ephebe, yes, they have slaves, but they call them slaves and treat them quite well, whereas in Omnia they don't have slaves, but everyone is effectively enslaved to an incredibly cruel regime.
Yeah, which is a decent point, actually. I can't pretend I've had enough time to sit down and think or read about this enough, but drawing the line between a slave which is called a slave and an entire city full of people who are free but will definitely be killed if they put a toe out of line, so surely that's slavery. But if it's not called slavery and they're not technically property, then blah 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 blah, you know.
Yeah,
where's the line? Where do we draw it?
Everything's very murky,
isn't it? Talking of murky, see our... Oh, fuck, no, we did this already. Never mind. That would have been a great segue if I hadn't mixed up my bullet points.
We have already talked about it, but yes, the sea afterlife for the sailors is excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have any other... Well, we don't go anywhere else.
Not yet. No, we're in the sea.
Although Jelly Baby gets a reference.
Does it? Oh, I missed that. Where was that?
Yeah, one of the slaves runs away to Jelly Baby for a couple of weeks every year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm glad the kingdom's doing well after all that nonsense.
Yeah, or before all that nonsense.
I'm headcanoning this takes place not that long afterward, because Zeno is so nonplussed by Brother and his tortoise and a little bit irked that I feel like he's dealt with Tepic already.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
And also, Ephebe and Sort are getting on quite well, so I feel like they kind of sorted out all their problems after that war they nearly had. Sorted out. Oh, we're a delight.
A delight.
Oh, Francine, you card. Little bits we liked. What does the turtle stand on?
I don't know. What does the turtle stand on?
On another turtle, obviously.
It doesn't stand on anything, you idiot. It's a turtle. It swims.
This is Om and brother discussing the great Artuin.
Yeah.
But this is a reference to turtles all the way down theory.
Yes.
Which is an analogy that has been told about many different philosophers, but the idea is that the philosopher has some kind of lecture, and afterwards an old lady comes up to him and says he's wrong, and actually the world's on the back of a turtle. So the world turtle is quite an old belief. And then he says, what does the turtle stand on? She says, another one, and it's turtles all the way down. Mm-hmm. So the actual saying turtles all the way down appears as early as 1838, but it's rocks all the way down. The idea is that something is on something is on something.
Sure.
Is an older belief. And it's been used to illustrate problems such as the regress argument in epistemology.
Good.
Epistemology.
Good.
Should have really checked how I say that before I started doing this. So the regress argument is the argument that any proposition requires a justification, but any justification itself requires support. And it's a problem in epistemology, in any situation where a statement has to be justified.
Okay.
So the problem of turtles all the way down is, okay, well, so if you're justifying the turtle by saying it's standing on another turtle, then you have to justify that turtle, and then you have to justify that turtle, and you end up with an infinite regression of turtles.
Okay. An infinite regression of turtles.
Yes.
Got you. As long as we're clear.
So that is the theory of turtles all the way down. I just thought I'd talk about it because it's an entertaining reference. And speaking of turtles, we've also got a tortoise and the idea of morphology.
Yes, yes.
It's the fun. The brain starts taking the shape of what it's in. So although his Om is a god, because he is in the body of a tortoise, he starts thinking like a tortoise, and he explains that tortoises are cynics.
Yes.
It's never explained why tortoises are cynics, but...
I think he says because shit things happen to tortoises, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose it's not an easy life being a tortoise. They do look quite cynical as well.
Yeah, yeah, they've got those old from being babies onwards, and...
Baby tortoises are adorable.
Calculated reptile eyes, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, I like as well that you kind of mentioned it in context of cities. So a Thebe sits on a hill facing the sea, and the citadel sits facing the desert.
And it creates very different ways of thinking.
Yeah.
And also brother's brain starts to change shape as he goes into a Thebe.
Yes.
He starts to think differently, put into a different environment.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he sort of assumes the shape of an Ephebian brain over an Omnian brain.
Yes.
So yes, I like this idea of morphology that we'll come back to.
Do we come back to that next week or in another book?
In general books, it's another one of those thematic themes that comes back over and over again, the idea of
another brain thematic theme, you say?
Yes, I was hoping we'd just skip over that. But
Were you hoping that? Well, you probably should have done a podcast for somebody else then, didn't you?
Chain letters, Francine.
Just a silly joke.
The chain
letters.
The tyrant
letters. Talking about other cities that kind of got converted to Omniism via the letters that put the minds of men in chains. Chain letters. So the chain letter to the Thebians: forget your gods, be subjugated, learn fear, do not break the chain. The last people who did woke up one morning to find 50,000 armed men on their lawn.
Yes.
Obviously a reference to chain letters.
Also to Paul's letters to the god, who did he fucking write to?
I don't know.
One of the chapters of the New Testament is St. Paul's letters to... which are letters of conversion. There's
never one read of, it. Sorry, mate. Didn't even see the movie.
One of my very, very favourite Eddie Izzard bits, and I will link to it in the show notes, is him making fun of Paul's letters to, and I can't remember who they were letters to now, and all of them sort of go, fuck said we'd write to him. Who signed us up for this exchange? Don't put jam on a magnet. Never put your granny in a bag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yes, I mentioned this because listeners our age or younger might not realise that chain emails, which this is brings to mind for most of us probably, were in fact predated by chain letters. So you would get letters saying, write this letter out 10 more times and send it to people, or, you know, you'll be cursed.
Your arms will fall off.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that, yeah.
Now it's share this Facebook post or...
Oh, yeah, that's right. We've moved past emails now, haven't we?
Yeah, we don't. But yeah, we had Facebook posts that say, if you don't share this, your arms will fall off. We had emails that said, if you don't forward this to 10 people, your arms will fall off. And before that, we had actual physical letters that said, if you don't send this letter to 10 people, your arms will fall off.
Before that, we had mad people who ran up to you in the street and said, if you don't repeat this to everybody else, your arms will fall off.
Yes, but that was a long time ago, before the postal service.
Mm-hmm. Send
10 carrier pigeons to... Or your arms will fall off.
Yeah, yeah. Smoke signals. Carve this into 10 stone tablets or your arms will fall off.
Right, this is 10 separate cuneiform scrolls and leave them in obscure locations so your arms will fall off. So I've been reading about ancient Babylonian civilizations.
Of course you have. That seems relevant.
That wasn't for the podcast. That was because I listened to a episode of You're Dead to Me on it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So that was a silly joke that apparently also referenced the Bible, which I didn't catch. Well done, Joanna. Well done. You read the Bible.
Once.
Did you read the Bible? All the way through, ever?
No.
No. I wonder how many people actually have.
There are definitely people who have.
Yeah, I mean, my dad has, obviously.
How many times?
Obviously, people who don't know my dad just reads everything. My dad's read the Bible and the Quran and the
Communist Manifesto.
Odyssey. I think he learned enough Greek to read the Odyssey in Greek or something. Yeah, obviously the Communist Manifesto, yes.
Oh, I miss your dad. He's great.
I love my dad. Stupid pandemic. Yeah. And then the other one is also just a silly little one, as they are so named. Our silly little ones. Little bits, fuck me.
Little oof, bits we liked.
Oof, Francine. Yeah, just, oh, my God. Which, with the punctuation, oh, full stop, my God, comma, is instead of an exclamation of surprise or horror, is going, oh, I forgot my God somewhere.
It's happened to the best of us.
I just thought that was a lovely, clever little punctuation cadence joke.
I did enjoy that. I love a sillily placed full stop.
Yes, a sillily placed full stop indeed.
No, sillily is a word. I'm embracing it.
Sure, why not?
So on to the bigger stuff.
Yeah.
And before I dive into religion, I want to talk about foreshadowing and general very clever writing techniques that Pratchett does.
Oh, go on, yes.
Also, this is all of the books are an omniscient third person narrator.
Yeah.
But generally so much from one person's point of view that you often forget for quite huge chunks that the narrator is omniscient.
Yes.
And then there'll be little moments that remind you. And one of the moments that I really loved in this is when Brother first goes to the library. It says the library of Afib was great until it burnt down.
Mm-hmm.
Which in itself, I'm obviously referenced to the burning of the Library of Alexandria.
Yes.
But we won't go into that.
Oh, by the way, there's another library I think this one might be based on, which was, it might have been Aristotle again. Fuck me. One of these lot.
Fucking Aristotle.
One of these philosophers I've written down.
Bugger for the bustle.
Made a... God damn it, Francine. I think it was Aristotle who had a library that apparently inspired the Library of Alexandria.
Ah, marvellous.
Yeah. He was one of the first people to kind of organise it in a certain way. That, yeah. Anyway, Karen.
Yeah, so there's just little foreshadowing moments like that. You know, it says at the beginning of that section, until it burned down, and you think, yeah. and you read it and you sort of think, like, especially reading it for the first time, I think you think, oh, it's like a Library of Alexandria reference, yeah. So at some point yeah. This library burns down. And then it happens by the end of 100 pages later.
You're like, oh, you just told me that, and I didn't even realise you told me that.
Yeah. And the other things he sort of builds cleverly, this whole invasion of Afib, the only reference to the approaching army is Brother not being sure about the camels in the desert earlier.
Yes.
And it's such a quick moment. You sort of don't really think about it. And then you come to it here. And the actual action of the coup happens off screen, as it were, off page.
Yeah.
Brother goes to the gate. Brother takes Vorbis to the gate. Vorbis kills a watchman. The gate's open. You find out that
conversation followed by a muffled silence. Lovely little sentence there.
You're told an army can cross the desert, and then Vorbis is in charge of Afib.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
baby
it.
Coup.
So again, it's just really, really clever writing. You don't need to see the action of what happened when the army ransacked the city.
No, yeah, that would have been tedious, possibly.
Would have
probably not have written by Pratchett, but less interesting than what he did have to say.
Yeah, because the point of the book is not the sack of Afib.
Yeah.
That's one catalyst to a greater ending. So that in a different book where that was the point, the story that was being told is how this city was ransacked, then yes, that would have been described in detail because that would be the big climax moment, but it's not here. So there's no need for the action to be on the page.
Yeah, something that most fantasy writers do not subscribe to.
Yes.
But why Pratchett's books are all small enough to hold in one hand, which we appreciate.
Yes, thank you, Pratchett. And also the slow build of Simony's kind of mania.
Ooh, the slow build of Simony is a fantastic sentence.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. The way he's like immediately deifying Didactylos.
And that. Ooh, look at this alliteration, Joanna. You're all over it today.
I am so poetic.
Absolutely.
And the way he wants Vorbis to be made an example of.
Yeah.
He doesn't just want things to be better. He wants to win.
Yes. Yes, the zealot side of him again, yeah.
And the way it's not...
We can all relate, I think, and hate that part of ourselves and try and stamp it down once we realise it's there.
Yes, we can all absolutely get too zealous about things. I mean, admittedly, these days I'm mostly zealous about people seasoning their food properly. Salt's not going to kill you.
All right.
Also...
It might.
Also, stop diets.
Well, okay. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you about salt today, Joanna. Actually, okay. I don't know how to argue with anything about salt. I put plenty of salt in my food.
I was just wondering what I could be a zealot about today.
Okay, sure. I would like to be a zealot about... See, now I'm hungry and I can't think of anything apart from food.
Well, we can be zealots about the diet industry then.
Okay, yeah, I have been listening to, what do you may call it this morning?
Oh, Michael Hobbs podcast.
Yeah, the maintenance phase. Yeah. Have you listened to any of this yet?
I've listened to a couple of episodes. It's really good. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the clever, just obviously the writing is always really good. Terry Pratchett's writing is really good. That's why we love him.
Yeah.
But the foreshadowing moments and the slow build of stuff is something I really noticed in this section. I thought it was all incredibly cleverly done.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially as he manages to build it up so quickly, as he said, it's like within 100 pages the action has happened. It's a short book and he manages to fit so many bits of, yeah.
Mm. Still moments that take you by surprise and then make you think back and go, ah.
Yeah. And as you said, it never really feels jarring when he switches from being the omniscient narrator, but from Brother's perspective to the then really overarching one. Yeah, he does it very smoothly, doesn't he?
I think he does. Obviously, we don't have chapters, but we have these kind of line break moments between scenes. And it tends to have, he tends to have the omniscient moments at the beginning of scenes. It's almost like a...
It's like an opening shot.
Yeah, it's like a wide perspective before you zoom into Brother.
You've got me thinking of things in fucking TV terms now.
Like, all I do is watch TV right now, so...
Again, I was re-editing the very first episode, and there's a bit there where you talk about how something panned and went from shot to shot, and I was like, what are you talking about? It's a book, and now here we are.
I've converted you. Speaking of converting, as we've already talked about Greek parallels, shall we talk about faith and belief?
Yeah, all right, I guess. Sure. What? That doesn't seem fraught. What thoughts do you have on faith this week, Joanna? It's Joanna's Faith Corner. Oh no, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, that sounds like I'm becoming some kind of weird zealot preacher. Yeah. We've agreed we're not a cult.
Not a cult.
I mean, a lot of what I had to say about gods and believing in them, we sort of covered earlier talking about the philosophers. I like this idea of there's no point believing in them because obviously they're there.
Yes.
That was a throwaway line of Witches Abroad and has become an entire huge thematic section of this book.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of the sort of relics of an outdated belief system, and the philosophers have chosen to ignore them because they want to learn about bigger things than the gods.
Yes. And well, unfortunately, being on the disc, you can't ignore them entirely.
Mm. But the idea of the origins of truth and beauty, they're not interested in creationism. The world is here, fine, but how here is the world?
Yes. Yeah. Let's learn about now and what is to come, not
what might have happened in the past.
Yes.
But the stuff about the power of belief that I really loved in this section, the scroll Brother takes from the library and Om reads with him from old charcoal Abraxas, suggests this thing that is what has happened to Om, which is you start with a god and people believing in the god.
Yeah.
A shell of worship forms around them.
Yeah.
And eventually that shell of worship and ritual becomes so solid that belief cannot penetrate through to the actual god.
Yes. And I like that he immediately followed it up with an example of Om going, go on then, kill Vorbis.
Yeah. And Brother's like, I loved that moment. He's like, and Brother absolutely believes in Om.
Yeah.
And believes that Om is his god.
Yeah.
But he still can't challenge the status quo of the shell of belief around him, in this case referenced by Vorbis.
Yeah. And mentioned here was the lost city of E, which I believe we've mentioned in a previous episode as something we wanted to know more about. Now we know something a little more about it.
Yes, this happened in the lost city of E.
Yeah.
And maybe partly why it's come up in a couple of books, and I think we went with it is meant to be like an Atlantis type thing.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like that as a concept.
I like it as a concept because it's something you see with organized religion. You know, people lose what the central tenets are because it becomes about the religion, not about...
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Using Christianity as the example, because obviously it's the one I know the most about, and sort of, yes, ending Peter's email last week, his point was he got so stuck in it, he believed literally everything and worshipped in a certain way, and eventually went, well, hang on, I still believe that there's a loving God and we should all treat each other nicely, but I really don't agree with anything else you're fucking saying, because that's all a bit bollocks, sense, really, isn't it?
Yeah. The there's a very good podcast about the Heaven's Gate cult that is presented by a chap who grew up in another Christian cult. And he said that part of the undoing of the cult he grew up in was that they made the children memorize the Bible, basically huge passages of the Bible in the way only children really can. It's very hard to do the same kind of thing as an adult. And therefore, when the adults would say something like, do this, the Bible says so, the children would be like, well, no, it doesn't.
Actually, what it says is.
Yeah, actually, I think you'll find. Blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah.
This is the thing.
I think probably something similar is going on here, in that brother knows what it says and is like, well, this to mom. And mom's like, oh, no, I didn't mean that. Sorry.
Yeah. And this goes into the idea that we were talking about, this sort of meta-truth. And I think, as well as that being a fascinating thing when it comes to Forbis and teaching brother the shell of it, because he's almost come far enough through religion to be allowed to know. And as I said, his particular sick curiosity of how far he can push brother.
Yeah.
But if you compare it to the philosopher's need to not know anything.
Yeah.
It's like the thing I talked about that's come up in a couple of these books, and the one that comes back to me is always Equal Rights, where the wizards now know that they don't know anything about the universe, having been to one of Simon's lectures, and they feel very superior about it because they're aware of just how much they don't know.
My ignorance is better than your ignorance.
Exactly. And here you have Forbis's idea of there being this absolute meta-truth compared to the philosophers, whose entire aim is to unravel everything they think they know. In fact, if I can just pop my coffee down and find the relevant thing I'm referencing, which I should have done already, but I am disorganized. It does say that. This is, brother is frustrated with the Ephebians. This is fairly on in him being there and meeting the philosophers. It's going to the, it's him talking to Didactylos. And he knew why, when Vorbis spoke about Phoebe, his face was grey with hatred. If there was no truth, what was there left? And these bumbling old men spent their times kicking away the pillars of the world, and they'd nothing to replace them with but uncertainty, and they were proud of this.
They seek ignorance.
Yes. And it's two hugely... I was just saying it's two hugely different ways of looking at the world, and eventually brother sort of finds something of a comfortable medium, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it's what evolved into what we now know as the scientific method, isn't it? Is that one must always try and prove oneself wrong.
And try and find the ignorance. And it's also a bit like what we talked about with the dark side of the sun and black holes. You find them by finding absence around them.
Ooh, very nice, yeah.
You approach truth by cosmic. Finding a lack of knowledge.
Oh, that's very profound. Very good. Well then. You're on it today, Joanna.
I got that.
You're alliterating, you're making astronomy references.
I know what I'm about.
How are you doing for socks?
I am wearing two of them.
Yes, goddamn, we're good.
The polka dot socks and stripes and things from the intentionally mismatched socks I got for Christmas from my sister, because that's a tradition.
Pretty.
Yes.
I'm wearing white trainer socks, which are socks.
Excellent. So
there is that to be said for them. They are a layer of cloth between my feet and the floor.
Last question you had, Francine, you wanted to know which scrolls and books we'd save.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there was this whole argument between Urn and Didactylos about, are we going to take the practical engineering books, or are we going to take the high-minded philosophy books, which are most useful? And Joanna, what would you say?
Speaking as a high-minded philosopher, let's take the practical engineering books.
Very good.
I'm not being funny, but wanky thoughts can be had over and over again. And if there's anything learned from studying philosophy, it's that everyone eventually comes to very similar conclusions by thinking a lot and occasionally eating some funny mushrooms.
Totally agree. I've put quite a lot of time into thinking what books and information I would want to print out, steal, hoard in the case of an apocalypse. And indeed, yes, it is things like, what plants can I eat? How do I build a generator? And less about, the stoic thoughts on what I should eat.
Stoic thoughts on knees.
The important thing is you don't get overly emotional about this mushroom.
I think some of that is because you and I are, as much as I like discussing all the wanky philosophy contents, at heart, we're both quite survivor type people, which I think is to do with the lives we've had to leave. We've always sort of, we've never been
in... That makes us sound a bit more protagonist than we are, but yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean, we've never actually been in giant amounts of physical hardship or financial hardship, but we have had to live lives where we have to work to keep our heads above water, and that means
With MacGyvered solutions.
Exactly. And that means that in, say, an apocalyptic scenario where we're deciding what information we want to save, our focus would be survival. Whereas someone who is used to surviving as a matter of course might be more focused on the high-minded thoughts of the Stoics on mushrooms.
High-minded thoughts of the Stoics on mushrooms is the title of my new indie album.
Yep.
Which will be dropping tomorrow.
You should drop it today. It's Bandcamp Friday.
It's what?
Bandcamp Friday.
What's that?
Bandcamp do a thing. It's like, I think it's like the first Friday of every month where they waive their fees so artists get more if you buy stuff from Bandcamp on the first Friday of every month.
Okay. Well, I've got like a few hours to write this album I just made up then. Okay.
Drop me a text if you want a hand.
Sure.
I've got nothing else on.
You also can't compose music, Joanna. I'm just...
Minor detail. I know what chords
are. We're both
lyricists.
Neither of us can play an instrument. Oh, no, I'd lie. You can play a ukulele.
Okay. I'm sort of been playing with piano chords on GarageBand for shits and grins.
Ah, cool.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Do you have an obscure reference for Neil for me, Francie?
I do. Which we've touched upon already, and which... is mathematical, I'm afraid. As you were talking about Vorbis and desert crossing, Terry Pratchett's Small Gods turns up on a mathematical Wikipedia page because of this very thing. Have you heard of the Jeep problem before?
No, I haven't.
Ah. Also known as Travellers Cross the Desert problem, which is possibly a bit more relevant for this, but it's more often called the Jeep problem now. It's basically working out how far you can get a Jeep across a desert without running out of fuel with a given quantity. And so the Jeep can only carry a fixed and limited amount of fuel, but it can leave fuel and collect fuel at fuel dumps anywhere across the desert. And it's been... in various forms posited since the 9th century, apparently. Also known as the camel and bananas problem, which I rather like.
I do like that. That's the name of my indie album dropping later today on Bandcamp.
Absolutely. The solution is much the same as Forbes comes up with here. I'm not going to read out all the ends and the brackets and the things. I will put a link in the notes. But it is going a fraction of the way leaving a thing. Going back. In the mathematical problem, one generally attempts not to kill half the people you've got in your group.
Yeah.
Vorbis obviously has a slight advantage over our hypothetical not a twat problem solver.
By being a twat, Vorbis does allow.
So
Vorbis is a twat. Hot takes this week on the True Shall Make You Fret.
Anyway, I'm not quite sure if that falls under obscure reference, which I say for a good 70% of these, so that's good.
Yeah.
But it was...
obscure equations.
I was trying, do you know what I was trying to do was find out if it had a root in a historical event. Because, again, I feel like I might be taking some of my vague history from having read Terry Pratchett a long time ago. I had it in my head that this had happened at some point, and I can't find it if it did. So again, readers, albatross, postcard, you know the drill.
Yep. But oh, I do like a maths problem. That's a nice new obscure reference finial for us. We haven't had maths for a while.
Well, I'll send you a coherent version of the maths problem and see if you can solve it before I send you a solution.
Oh, cool. I think.
Was that sincere?
I'm not.
You've gone a bit, my internet's still a bit unstable, you've got a little bit blurry. I can't tell from the tone of your voice if you're really angry with me.
God, I don't know anymore. No, I haven't done maths for a while, apart from trying to...
Well, you're the one I ask when I have maths issues.
What was
I was like, when I have women's issues, you know, I come to...
What was the thing I said the other day that confused... Oh yeah, the radius is the repeated variable in those equations or something.
Oh, yeah, God.
It was a crossword clue.
Yeah, no, I just, yeah, I blank out, sorry.
Anyway. We've wildly tangented. I think it's probably time to wrap this
which
up
which is a
slightly.
Mathematical term. Puns. I don't know what it means in math.
I would explain tangents, but I don't want to.
Yeah,
so,
please don't, yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Truth Shall Make You Fret. We will be back next Monday to talk about the thrilling conclusion of Small Gods.
Yes.
Thrilling. Don't use the word thrilling enough.
No. Well, it always sounds a little bit sarcastic.
Everything I say sounds a little bit sarcastic, Francine. I lost sincerity when I was about 17 years old.
Well, yeah, but especially when you use effusive adjectives.
Oh, effusive. I like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. God. Do you know what? I think we said anyway more in this episode than we have in any other. I'm not going to count that, obviously, but...
If a listener wants to count, let us know.
No, don't.
Make us a graph.
No, I'm telling you right now, don't do that.
Please don't count our word rep. Quick plug before we go. We've dropped a few hints around this, but we can definitely say now that we are taking part in Lamidos on the Clax. This is an online Discworld convention taking place from the 5th to the 7th of March. We, on the Sunday, the 7th, we will be taking part in a panel on Discworld podcasting. There's going to be loads of other fun stuff happening over the weekend. Ben Aranovich is doing a panel, the guy who wrote Rivers of London, which if you haven't read, go read that because you'll love it.
Yeah. Big Pratchett fan is Ben Aranovich.
Also big Pratchett fan. Stephen Briggs is coming on to talk about adapting Discworld. The guys from Baxmindle Games who make the Discworld board games are going to be there. And it's only £20 and the profits all go to charity. So you can go to @LamidosCamp on Twitter, or we will link to the website in our show notes today to get tickets. But please come along and watch us and support us.
Yeah.
And come to the panel and ask us intelligent questions, please, because we've never done a panel before.
We might give intelligent answers. You never know.
Bollocks, will we? Anyway, until next time, dear listener, you can follow us on Instagram @TheTrueShallMakeYouFret, on Twitter @MakeYouFretPod. You can find us on Facebook @TheTrueShallMakeYouFret. You can join our subreddit, r/TTSMYF. You can email us your thoughts, queries, castles, albatrosses and snacks, thetruthshallmakeyefretpod@gmail.com. Please don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcast because it helps other people find us. Tell other people about us.
Actually, yeah, if you could drop us a review on Facebook, that would be good. I just looked at the page for the first time in ages the other day and we've got like 2 reviews on there and one of them hated us. So I think we've got a 3-star average.
Yeah, please reverse.
Jack it up, guys. Wait.
Make it sound good. And in the meantime, dear listener,
don't let us detain you. Oh, my internet connection is unstable. It has come up as saying, well, that's
mood.